Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And as always, we always have interesting people, and interesting people who've done very fascinating things. And today I have a woman by the name of B.J., well, maybe we could find out what that stands for, B.J. Rosenfeld, who wrote a book called The Chameleon in the Closet. And I actually read the book. It's really fascinating, and it's going to be reviewed in the Jewish Action in the fall of 2013 by Rabbi Jack Abramowitz. But I think it's really, really fascinating book. B.J., how are you?
I'm doing very, very well today. Thank you, Steve.
Well, that's good. B.J. stands for?
Barbara Jean.
Barbara Jean. Okay, Barbara Jean.
Yes, please do not call me that.
Okay, so we're just going to call you B.J. That's how we're going to keep it. We're going to keep it. Okay, and in the book where it says, you know, The Chameleon in the Closet, it says on the bottom, the tagline, a conservative Jewish mother reaches out to her Orthodox sons. So tell me about a little bit about why you decided to write the book. I mean, it's fascinating, by the way, and it's really interesting, and I think so many people will relate to it. But why did you decide to write it?
Well, it started out as a journal. What happened was my older son was in Israel learning. He went directly after college. He was there during college. And then at the age of 23, he called home to say he was coming home to find a wife. And I said, find a wife? Obviously, you're not going to go into the yellow pages. What do you mean, find a wife? He said, well, he went to a shadchan. And, of course, I automatically thought of Fiddler on the Roof. And
right.
He said, Mom, give me a break. Of course it's not Fiddler on the Roof. I went to a real-life shadchan who has found this really, really special girl for me to meet. And he was going to come home to meet this girl. Never having had the experience of anything to do with the shadchan except for watching Fiddler on the Roof, I went out and bought a journal. And I kept track of the entire courtship. And that was the start of my memoir.
And this is your eldest son, right?
Yes, it is.
Your eldest son, who's Yehuda, right?
Yes, he is.
I guess his name wasn't Yehuda when he grew up.
No, what happened was all the names had been changed.
Ah, to protect the innocent. Okay.
Absolutely. My younger son and my older son both have English names and Hebrew names. And the older one did not want, first of all, the opening sentence in my book says, my older son did not want me to write this book. And that's
absolute
fact. So what happened was, after the book was in its final form, I let both my sons and daughters-in-law read the book. And my older son said, you know, I guess it's okay, but the names have to be changed and absolutely no photographs whatsoever. So my husband's name is the same, my name is the same, everybody else's name is different, as are most of the location names.
So the names are different?
Those are not their given
names. Oh, right. But that's what you call them now, or that's what they call themselves.
No, it's not.
It's not.
They take pseudonyms.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay, I got it. Okay, so first of all, how did it come about? I mean, you know, you say you're kind of conservative Jew, and so you have these two kids who become Orthodox, one more, you know, to the right, like Haredi kind of Orthodox, the other one more centrist. How did it come about?
Well, our house had always been kosher, and I did the best I could based on my background. And when my older son went to Princeton, he decided he wanted to work in a Jewish summer camp with his buddies the following summer. And the camp was very happy to have him, but they said, we can't hire you until you take some kind of course in Judaic studies so you have a better background. Now, this is a conservatively run camp.
Really?
But they wanted more of a background. Yeah, it's Camp Ramah.
Camp Ramah, sure, of course. Everybody knows it.
Camp Ramah in Palmer, Mass, yeah. Wonderful place.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And so my son took a course in Judaic studies, which really sounded good to me. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. The course started, and my son started to change. He became very serious, very sullen, and I got really, really scared and thoughts of Jim Jones and the cult.
Uh-huh. Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Excuse Excuse me?
Drinking the Kool-Aid, you mean?
That's one way of looking at it. That's a, oh, yeah, well, I was very scared. My husband said, you know, oh, our son's just going through a stage. Don't worry about it. But I didn't believe him. So I called the rabbi and found out that our son had not joined a cult, because everything I knew about Orthodoxy, well, I didn't really know anything about Orthodoxy, so I take that back. I'd never met anybody who was Orthodox. And everything I'd read about any cult leaders told me that they're not very friendly. They keep to themselves. They don't answer very many questions. And this Orthodox rabbi, Steve, was wonderful. We really hit it off. And I learned that my son was learning more about the beauty of our religion, which was great. I had no qualms with that. We arranged to have my son come home, and things started to progress from there. My house was fine as far as kashrut was concerned initially. As time went on, my son started to hint that my house wasn't kosher enough, and I hit the roof. How dare he tell me how to keep kosher? I was the one who taught him.
And this was all during when he was in college, though?
Most of it, that's when it started, yes.
Okay, Princeton.
So it all started with Camp Ramah.
Great, okay.
Thanks, I'm very happy at this point. And so it continued. My son and I started arguing and arguing because I was insulted. How dare he tell me that what I was teaching him was wrong? And then I felt as though I was going to lose him. We were becoming strangers. That connection that I had always felt with him was going. And I never wanted that to happen. So it came to me that if I didn't start putting him and his needs first, I was really going to lose him. So I started asking him what was involved in being more kosher. And I now carry with me a list of, oh, I don't know how many different hectares, and I do the best I can to buy the same products or similar products, equivalent products, and it works out very well. And as a matter of fact, thanks to all of this, I am vice president of the Vod HaKashrut of the Capital District.
Really?
The lay board. And I'd never even known what a Vod was.
No kidding. Wow,
yep.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's up in Albany, around Albany, New York, right?
Yes, you know Rabbi Bomzer?
Yes, of course, absolutely. We know Rabbi Bomzer very, very well, absolutely, no question about it.
Yeah, so that's...
So you're on the board, you're on the lay board of the Vod HaKashrut.
Yes, I am.
Oh, fantastic. So this is your son, and then your other son, I mean, what happened, did he become interested because his older brother was now interested, and that's what happened?
Probably a large part of it. That's the way it usually is with siblings. But another thing that happened was right before senior year in high school. Now, we live upstate New York in a very mixed community. There are not a lot of Jewish kids in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger son, wanted to go to Israel. And he went, yeah, I don't know if you're going to believe this or not, but it's the truth, Steve. He went to Israel with Camp Ramah on a tour. And he came back. He had a great, great time. He came back wearing a yarmulke. And there he is, this strapping guy, walking through the halls of the high school with a yarmulke on his head, and people saying to him, "What's that thing on your head?" And he replied very proudly, "It's a yarmulke, and I wear it because God is everywhere."
Wow.
And that was his start.
So then where did he go from there, that son, your second son?
He went to UPenn.
University of Pennsylvania, where there's a nice Jewish community and a nice Hillel, and we have the nice program, by the way, at Orthodox Union, the JLIC program, which we have on the college campus, so we know that place well.
Okay, yeah, it was great. It was great. So that was his start, and after a while, both sons were in Israel learning after... Excuse me?
No, that's good. Okay, right.
No, the older one went and started at Or Sameach.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very happy there. So the younger one, right after graduation from high school, because my sons are 3 years apart.
Right.
The younger one took off and went to Orsamer also. But he wasn't too happy with it because his feeling was that everybody there was on their way to wearing a black hat.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt that it was a feeder for Mir, and that was not his goal. So after a while, my younger son switched from Orsamer to Chappelle's and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely loved it. And so the older one went to Mir, and he is still learning after a number of years. And my older son's family lives in Jerusalem.
Right. Your older son lives in Jerusalem, and your younger son lives in New York. So, I mean, the question is, you call yourself a chameleon because obviously you have different wardrobes for what role you're playing at that particular point in time. Do you find it difficult? Do you feel like you're an actress sometime?
Do I feel like I'm an actress? No, I don't. That's a really intriguing question, but I don't, because if you think about it, do you have children, Steve?
Oh, yes, children, grandchildren, so sure.
So let's give this some thought. Are you the same person inside, whether you're with your grandchildren, your own children, the people you do business with, your wife? Are you the same person inside?
No, obviously people have different, personalities. But certainly on the outside, I mean, you're certainly going to dress the same way. Where you kind of talk about your that funny part about how you go into the ladies' room on the way out of the airport in Tel Aviv and how you become a new person. Because I guess your kids are waiting for you, like with that little sign, "We love you, Bubby," or something like that, right?
Yes, they are.
You know, I think it's really fascinating. I was actually once on a plane going to Seattle, and I was with this woman who was sitting there next to me, and she was talking to me because I was wearing a kippah, and she was wearing jeans and the whole, you know, nine yards, and we were just talking, and then the plane lands, and I kind of go to get my baggage, and all of a sudden I see this woman. Now, she hadn't changed, but all of a sudden, while I was going to get my baggage, I see this young couple, like with two little kids, and he's more like a Chabad kind of a guy, and I'm saying, like, I wonder who they're waiting for. And sure enough, this lady comes down, and there she was, the Bubby. But, you know, like, I never had any idea at all. But with you, I guess they're waiting. I've been at that scene a lot of times in the airport where they're all waiting, and there you are, so now you've changed. What about your husband? Your husband doesn't have to change. He just puts on a yarmulke, and he's all set to go, right?
Absolutely. He wears the same kind of brown yarmulke that my older son wears. A black yarmulke, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
All he has to do.
That's
but
it.
I will
easy.
Tell you.
Easy enough, right. Now, you have grandchildren, and I know because I read the book, and I know that I'm sure you're proud of all of them. And as your husband reminds you, you're proud to have Jewish grandchildren, which is a great thing today, a wonderful thing. But how old are they, first of all? How's the oldest one?
My sons?
Yeah.
My oldest son is 36. My younger
your
son
grandchildren.
Is 33.
What's the oldest age of your grandchildren?
My oldest grandchild is almost 11.
Okay. So do they know that you have a different life when you're back in the Capital District?
Yes, they do. They're very, very aware of it. And it's really fascinating because my daughter-in-law, my older sons, I have the two best daughters-in-law in the entire world. I have
Great.
To tell you that for starters. I mean, that's a given. But the older one tells her kids that Bubby and Poppy is my husband,
okay.
Bubby and Poppy's mommy and Tati did not teach us to do things when we were children. So there are a lot of things that we don't know. And it makes a tremendous difference. For example, my husband, when we go visit in Israel, doesn't go to shul with my son. Doesn't wear a black hat. I don't wear a shaitel. And the kids every now and then will ask, and then they'll say, "Oh, I know. your mommy and Tati didn't teach you all about this when you were a child, so you don't know. And they explain stuff to us, Steve. They love to explain things to us. Really neat.
Did they do a good job?
They do a phenomenal job, yeah. And they're very happy to answer all the questions as many times as we might have them. And they also ask, every now and then they'll say, Bibi, is it true that everybody in America has a tattoo? And I'll say, no. Is it true that in America everybody does whatever? And I will explain to them. I mean, it's a give and take. It's great. We're learning from each other, and that's what's wonderful.
Now, have they come back since they've been in Israel to visit with you?
They've been back as a family twice. And my older daughter-in-law came back a number of years ago to visit her grandmother, who is now deceased. But she came back with one of the babies to meet her grandmother, just because she hadn't been back in a long time. And as far as my son and his entire family, they've been back here twice, and that's it. Because think about this. It's a lot of work to put everybody on the plane. And once you get here, it's exhausting for everybody. My son and daughter-in-law in Israel now have 9, and the oldest is almost 11.
They have 9 children?
They have 9 children, and he is coming. My son is coming with 3 of his kids, the oldest boy and the 2 oldest girls. They're coming towards the end of the summer to spend time with my husband's parents so that the kids can meet their great-grandparents.
Oh, really? That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They're going to be here for maybe 3 days, 4 days.
Oh, okay.
So we'll drive down.
So now it's going to be... not the chameleon in the closet, the chameleon in the house or something like that? That's the way it's going to be?
Not really, because the kids know that the great-grandparents, I don't know, maybe my father-in-law will wear a yarmulke. I really don't know. But, no, I doubt that my mother-in-law is going to do anything different.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
What about your other son? Your other son lives in New York, so obviously you must see him more often, I guess, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
And what's it like there between your son and your daughter-in-law? They have children also or not?
They now have 3.
Okay.
And their oldest is almost 7.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, it's different going to visit them because they live in a far more mixed community. And my younger daughter-in-law, talk about a chameleon, my younger daughter-in-law wears denim. Whereas my older daughter-in-law would never.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be very comfortable wearing a denim skirt.
I got you. Mm-hmm.
And as far as if there's an extra stringency, my older son will follow it. My younger son will do some investigating beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Now, your younger son works at this point, actually has a job?
Yes, he does. Uh-huh. If you want to call it a real job as compared to what my older son does, which my husband still doesn't understand and says, well, okay, when are you going to get a real job? But yeah, the one in America does, yeah.
So what does he do?
He is he's a professor.
Oh, great.
He has a doctorate.
And your older son in Israel, what does he do?
He's learning.
Oh, he's learning, but he doesn't teach or anything like that at this point.
He will. What he's told us is, when he's ready, he will share his knowledge. He wants to make sure he has it all ready before he starts sharing it. Obviously, he shares it with the grandkids.
Right.
And if I ask him a question, to be honest, Steve, when I talk to my younger son, it's a lot easier because my younger son is a lot more aware of the secular world.
Sure, he's worldly, of course.
Yeah. My older son, if I ask him a question, what are you learning? He might give me a quick answer. And then I just have to remind him, okay, I'm not interviewing you. This is because I'm curious. Please explain. But I don't know what else to say to him except, how is your learning going today?
I got you.
I don't know. I don't know if there's really a correct question.
Now, what about the two of them? Do they have a good relationship, your two sons?
Yes, they do. They don't see each other very often. Mm-hmm. The younger one went to Israel with his family last year for Sukkot, and that was wonderful. They didn't stay in the same place because my older son's apartment's not big enough. But my younger one stayed right in the same community, and they had all their meals together.
That's wonderful.
And it's
great.
Terrific.
So I guess it's an interesting situation. I'm certainly going to encourage people to read the book because I think it's a fascinating story. Not unlike, by the way, many other stories that are out there. You know, we at the Orthodox Union have a whole division called NCSY. And it's a very, very big organization for teenagers. And so many of the stories that we hear are, you know, young men and women who come to NCSY and then eventually go to Israel. And they take different paths. But, you know, the parents, I always like to talk to the parents because I think it's very interesting. The parents always tell me about their life. And I know the common denominator that I always found with most of the parents that I talk to is that they are certainly proud that they have Jewish grandchildren. And that's certainly, it's a great thing today to say you could have Jewish grandchildren. So I'm sure I know your husband is ecstatic about it and reminds you about it all the time, as you say in your book. But it's a wonderful thing, and I think that you've been able to manage and blend the worlds together. So I certainly was going to recommend this to anybody who's out there. And someone who would like to contact you, maybe like, you know, there may be a shul or somebody out there who would like you to speak at some event, how would they be able to contact you?
I have a website, which is what at the moment it will be changed, but at the moment it is read READ as in Donald READBJ.com.
Great, wonderful.
And, I can give you my email address.
Sure, go ahead. Let's give it to them so that people can know how to contact you.
Which is my name, B.J. Rosenfeld, B-J-R-O-S as in Sam, E-N as in No, F as in Fred, E-L-D as in David, at AOL.com.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Well, listen, thank you for coming on the program. I really appreciate it. Thank you for writing the book. I'm sure many people could relate to it. And very, very best of luck to you, okay?
Thank you, Steve. This was great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.